talking about punching a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. Good Wednesday morning. I told you guys yesterday it was going to be a different Oklahoma when you got up this morning. Sure enough, here it is. We went from short sleeve shirt yesterday to Carhartt jackets and long underwear today. So that's Oklahoma for you. Currently, let me switch this real quick. 33 degrees, wind chills at 21, winds are out of the north-northeast at 24 miles an hour, gust up to 32 miles an hour, humidity is 43, and it's been chaotic this morning. Went and checked the girls over here, west of Elk City, where my heifers are, ever since that one passed 2 weeks ago, or a week ago last Monday, none of them even thinking about it, they're just wanting their hay and all that other good stuff, so they're looking good. I pull up in the parking lot out here, and I pull up between the Mountain Man and Butch Black because they were just leaving from their morning shows. Mountain Man rolls his window down. He's yelling at me for speeding around the corner. Then all of a sudden, some guy in a white Dodge Charger with tinted windows yelling all kinds of stuff at me. I can't understand him because he's yelling through the windows, but you could hear him through the windows. My boss, Gabe, was standing on the back patio here just from getting in the Hummer or just coming back from somewhere. He was laughing at me, and I was thinking, all right, this is the way you guys want it today. This is the way you're going to get it. So that's, it's off to chaotic. The only person being nice to me this morning was Jared and Candace and Nathan and who else is down there? Aaron, did I name them all? Anyway, everybody's being nice to me, but anyway, so it's pretty chaotic around here. Well, prices for grains are up this morning. Wow, wheat's making a quick recovery from going down last week. Cash prices this morning in Oklahoma, hard red winter wheat was $7.61, corn $6.13, Milo $6.11, soybeans $13.11, and bam, cotton, $1.23. I hadn't found the story on why cotton's shot up so quick, but hadn't had time to look for it, to be honest with you. But $1.23, that's got to be a historical high there, I think. I'm not 100% sure, but anyway, pretty high for cotton. Well, wheat futures surged in overnight trading amidst tensions between Russia, Ukraine, the largest and third biggest exporters of grain. Russia has been moving troops and is some consider a hostile move towards Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke yesterday with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, however you want to say his name, in a bid to de-escalate the tensions surrounding the deeply troubling Russian military buildup in and near Ukraine. Canada has reportedly sent some special operations teams to Ukraine, and the U.S. is reportedly weighing increased measures to help Ukraine should Russia attack. It's not cool. Anyway, attack on Ukraine or even rising tensions between two of the world's largest wheat exporters likely will disrupt the markets. Also giving prices a boost is continued dry weather in the United States' southern plains. Little or no rain has fallen in the region in the past 30 days. Our region, we're tagging on pretty hard about 90 days now. I mean, we had a tenth or two there 2 or 3 weeks ago, but I don't think they really consider anything unless we get a quarter or more. According to the data that was provided to me from the National Weather Service, about 58% of Kansas, the biggest producer of grain, was suffering from drought conditions last week, up from 52% a week earlier, and only 15% 3 months ago. Wheat for March delivery jumped 13.5 cents to $7.82.5 a bushel overnight on the Chicago Board of Trade. while Kansas City futures gained 15.25 to 788, and it is even up quite a bit this morning. Soybeans and corn futures also surged overnight on reports that more hot weather is headed to Brazil, which should further stress crops in the South American countries. About a fourth of Brazil and 70% of Paraguay are suffering from drought stress. Relief minimal for southern Brazil and Paraguay drought areas for at least another week, which likely will result in diminishing yield potential, according to the forecast. In Argentina, temperatures hit record highs topping 100 degrees, but rainfall this week is about half the country's corn and soybean growing areas will linger the next couple of days. Soybean futures for March delivery jumped 14.25 cents to $13.75 a bushel overnight. Soybean meal gained $4.10 to $394.20 a short ton, and soybean oil futures added 0.91 cents to 59.99 cents a pound. Corn futures for March delivery surged 7 cents to $6.06 a bushel. Well, wheat export inspections rise across the board, which is a good thing. Inspections of corn, wheat, and beans for overseas delivery all jumped in the 7 days that ended on January 13th, according to the USDA. Corn assessments were reported at 1.2 million metric tons, and that's up from 1.02 million a week earlier. That's also up from 933,140 tons examined during the same week a year earlier. Wheat inspections last week totaled 369,188 metric tons. That is up from 234,000 last week and 283,000 same time last year. Examinations of soybeans from offshore delivery jumped 1.72 million metric tons, and that's up from 985,000 tons a week earlier. Since the start of the marketing year on September 1st, the agency has inspected 15.3 million metric tons of corn for export. That's down from 17.5 million tons examined during the same time frame a year ago. So we're down about 2.2 million. Soybean inspections since the beginning of September are now at 33.4 million metric tons, and that's down from 43.5 million tons same time last year. Well, obviously, there's some extreme cold weather is blanketing the northern plains into the central corn belt, and I'll just throw my 2 cents in there, into the southern plains of Oklahoma. In North Dakota, a wind chill warning is in effect until noon tomorrow, as values are expected to drop as low as minus 45. The dangerous cold winds could cause frostbite on exposed skin in just as little as 5 minutes. Wind chills will improve some during the day, but it will still remain very cold. A wind chill advisory is in effect for all of Iowa, where values are expected to drop to around minus 20 to minus 25 and could get as low as minus 30 tomorrow morning. Well, there you have it. That's your first segment report. I'm really excited. Coming up right after this first break, I'm going to have Professor Ray Smith from the University of Kentucky, not Kentucky University, but the University of Kentucky. He is a forage extension specialist. He specializes looking at all of his stuff on his profile and the articles I've read from him. A lot of it's alfalfa, and he just got through updating a very old book of rules for grazing alfalfa, and we're going to talk about that coming up. So I hope you guys enjoy my time that I'm going to get to spend with him today. If you have any questions for the professor, please don't be bashful. Text in on our KCO Ag text line at 580-225-9697. You're going to enjoy this. This guy's got COVID, and his head stopped up, but he said it just feels like a cold to him, and he keeps on working. So he's coming on today, even though he's sick. So just if he kind of sounds a little snotty like me when I don't take my allergy pill on the show, don't worry about it. He's a tough guy. He ain't letting the COVID slow him down. So anyway, we'll be right back after this. It's Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
My background is in AI service. If you're doing that, you're more progressive. You're not going to the sale barn and buying a bull for the cheapest you can get. You're searching for better genetics. You're searching for a better quality product. Just like, do you go down to the used car store and buy the car with all the dents and dings, or do you want the new car? We decided we'd start building our own pretty vehicles rather than going paying the price for the pretty vehicle. B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching B&L Red Angus.
Are you in the market to buy or sell cattle? Then don't miss Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale's every Wednesday at 9:30 a.m. Buyers can bid in person or online. To consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. That's 580-331-8547. Be sure and check out the market reports and each week's penny news. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and do appreciate it.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Ron Hayes here. Here's what the good folks are saying about SEI Agritech's Livestock Nutrition Center's feed and minerals.
Hi, this is Ty Ford. I'm a local cattle rancher, and I buy my feed with Kent Watkins at SEI Agritech in Elk City. He's a Livestock Nutrition Center authorized distributor, and they have been very helpful in developing a program for feeding out our butcher steers. We use his starter and finisher rations on our steers, and we have had great results and great feedback from our repeat customers.
Located on South Randall, visit SEI Agritech in Elk City.
Today in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back. Short break there. 36 degrees, wind chills 24. Uh-oh, the winds are getting up. North-northeast, 29 miles an hour with gusts up to 37 now. And on the phone with me right now is Professor Ray Smith. He's from the University of Kentucky. And Ray, I just want to tell you that I got yelled at also earlier this morning because one of the guys I work with is from Kentucky, and I said Kentucky University, and he corrected me real quick.
yeah, we're a little particular about that.
Oh boy, I didn't do that. I wasn't ready for that. But how you feeling today?
Well, I got a little case of COVID, but not too bad right now. So other than that, I'm doing okay. Hopefully I can get it over with.
Oh, yeah. Well, man, it's going around everywhere. It's crazy. One of the schools over, I live west of here, they shut down for the day because of staffing issues. But, man, it's just going everywhere, and I think we're just going to have to deal with it. And
that's right.
We already are, actually. So, but, well... before we go on to that, first thing we touch on is that article I read that you wrote. But before we go on there, will you tell all of our listeners who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm Ray Smith, and I'm a forage extension specialist at the University of Kentucky. So I work with farmers and county agents around the state. Originally from Georgia, spent some time in Virginia, and also up in Canada, University of Manitoba, but really enjoy working with farmers and giving practical advice based on research to them.
Well, you, I read on your profile that the University of Kentucky has on you, and it looks like you spent some time up in Canada.
That's right. Yes, actually, spent 11 years up there, so... When you talked about the wind and the wind chill, I know a little bit of what you're talking about.
I worked almost 3 years in North Dakota, so I got it.
that's right.
But it's crazy. I still think the cold out here in western Oklahoma in the Texas Panhandle, and I don't know why, just this certain area up here, I know it doesn't get as cold as it does in North Dakota and Canada and up there in Montana and stuff, but this cold down here, I guess it's because it's dry, or if it's either humid or dry, it just cuts through you like a knife, and it's just crazy. But hey, I'm still alive, so I made it through.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you just recently updated a publication that advocates alfalfa grazing, and I know you and I could probably talk on this all day, but that was a great article. I already told you that more than once, probably, but this tell everybody what this article that this publication that you just updated, what was it to start with?
So about 30 years ago, Gary Lacefield and several other forage specialists wrote a article or pamphlet called Grazing Alfalfa. And in essence, they were talking about all the advantages of grazing alfalfa, not just relying on it as a hay crop. And so the National Alfalfa and Forage Alliance, or NAFA, gave me a little bit of funding to update this article. The same premise that alfalfa is good for grazing, but updating it with what's happened with varieties, with what's happened with management, even what's happened with high fertilizer prices, and it's all the more reason to let your animals graze so they recycle those nutrients straight back on the ground in their manure and in their urine. So our real hope in writing this is kind of give some practical tips to farmers with how they go about grazing alfalfa, and also to realize that there's all kind of benefits of grazing alfalfa, and there's just a few unique considerations, not overgrazing, not leaving the animals out there for too long, giving a good rest period, the same as you have with hay.
Right. And when you talk about this grazing in this publication you've got there, and before we leave, we'll tell everybody how they can get over there and see this publication. There's a one question I keeps coming across my mind is, you always hear that you want the alfalfa to go dormant before you graze on that. Is this true or not true?
So if you're grazing at the end of the season, you know, in the fall of the year or early winter, then you do want it to go dormant before that grazing.
Okay.
Because you want the alfalfa to have grown back enough after that last hay cutting to build back its carbohydrates.
Okay.
And then when it goes dormant, which happens after a couple of hard freezes, you know, kind of mid-20s or less, then once it's grazed, the plants aren't going to try to grow back. They're going to keep those carbohydrates to come back in the spring. So that's the important thing if you're grazing at the end of the season. Now, if you're grazing throughout the season, throughout the year, then the important thing is just to give a good rest period between grazings.
Okay.
So just like you're cutting hay, you know, you want to give it, you know, 4 weeks, 30 days, something like that, between cuttings. You do the same thing with grazing. You'd give it a rest period so it builds back those carbohydrates.
So how long a period, can you give me an example, how long a period that you can graze the alfalfa during, like normal hay cuttings, like if you're grazing it during the summer or early spring or whatever, how long can you graze on it? A couple of days, and then just pull off of it and give it a break for 3 to 4 weeks. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So ideally, you'd move out, you'd put animals on a, you divide up the farm into pastures or paddocks. Maybe a lot of people do it with temporary fencing.
Right.
And you'd put them on there for 3 to 5 days. And then you'd rest that paddock, move them on to the next one. And a good rule of thumb is to try to give it a, you know, 4 week rest period or so. You know, that's not exact. Same as with hay cutting.
Right.
Another way to look at it is you let the alfalfa grow up to that kind of late bud, early bloom stage before grazing. You're really treating it as a hay crop. You're just using the animals to harvest it, and you're just making sure they're not on there for too long. Because once they graze it, you don't want it to start growing back. You want to move them on before it starts growing back and gets regrazed.
I got you. Well, that is there any concerns of, I guess there's always concern when you got cattle on a really green pasture, especially high protein like alfalfa. I guess that you need to take your normal precautions with your cattle for bloating and all that good stuff.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of worry about bloat, and I know I've heard several people say one of the greatest problems with bloat is the fear of bloat, not using alfalfa because you're worried about bloat, rather than getting all the extra gains.
Right.
But it is a real concern. It's a real valid concern. And so, you know, there's a few simple things to do. A lot of producers will have a grass mixed in with the alfalfa that dilutes that really high protein. They'll make sure they don't turn them out right in the morning if there's a dew there, so it's not quite as lush. They'll let the alfalfa get a little bit of size on it. Maybe the first time the animals are going in, it's there in an early bloom stage, so they're getting more stem mixed in with those lush leaves. And, you know, a simple thing, like you've got a pure alfalfa stand. Before the animals go in the first time, just get their belly full of hay so that they're not getting so much alfalfa in there all at once. It's not like this sudden release of these lush proteins from the alfalfa.
Right.
And if you want a foolproof way to reduce the chance of bloat or eliminate the chance of bloat, would be given a bloat preventative like Proloxylene, or often it's under trade names like Bloat Guard, in a mineral or in a block form.
Yes, we do that all the time on wheat pasture down here because we have a lot of wheat pasture in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The bloat blocks are no big deal around here. It's just normal stuff because back in the 80s when we turned out on lush wheat pasture, you know, we'd fill our cattle up full of we didn't have the privilege of bloat blocks back then,
mm-hmm.
or they were
mm-hmm.
just now then coming out. But just make sure your cows are full of hay and then turn them out, you know, and then maybe that first day just run them back in on the grass and then make sure they eat some more hay and then let them go and then let them have at it. They're on their own for after that.
Yeah, that exact same advice fits with grazing alfalfa.
Well, yeah, because I've read a lot of articles because I'm by far not a alfalfa expert. I love alfalfa. I've been around alfalfa a lot. I grow alfalfa. Matter of fact, my neighbor to the west and north of me probably gets annoyed by me because I think he's one of the best alfalfa growing farmers in our area. And I'm always calling him, what about this kind of sand? What about this? What about that? He's probably saying, Jimmy, you got anything better to talk about than alfalfa? But I love alfalfa. There's a couple of the text line is lighting up for you. How's this? So
sure. Okay.
I don't know how good a vet you are, but this this one guy texts in. He says, I've always heard an alfalfa-rich diet causes kidney problems in horses. Do you know anything about that?
A good question. And there's another publication on the website I'll mention at the end about alfalfa for horses.
Okay.
And the only worry is if the horse doesn't have adequate water. They easily flush out that excess nitrogen in the urine, and so there's no problems with the kidneys as long as they've got adequate supplies of water. And Dr. Laurie Lawrence, an equine nutritionist here at University of Kentucky, helped write that publication. So when I give the website at the end, he might want to look that up.
Okay, cool. And then one other question is, let's see here. We got two questions. Can we get clarification of blister bugs? Is it just the stripe ones that kill horses, or is it just one of several?
Probably the best answer, the stripe and the black can cause it. And the biggest worry of blister beetles is they get in a mating ball, and so when you get in hay and you get a number of them there together, and the animals are eating that, that's the worry. So you do want to make sure when you're buying hay, when you're buying alfalfa hay, you know, you have an assurance from the person producing it that it doesn't have blister beetles, that they've either used a chemical or the way that they put up that hay, they've made sure the blister beetles aren't there.
Right, yeah, because I've got a couple of videos of balls of blister bugs, and the probably normal person that's not into into agriculture would probably just make them almost barf at the sight of it because I've seen balls as big as an acre. But, you know, the first and second cut, and that's why all horse buyers and horse hay always want at least they they prefer the second cutting and then maybe again the fourth cutting, because late June and July is when the blister bugs show up here in western Oklahoma. And a lot of guys go clear to Colorado to buy their hay because they don't have blister bugs in that area up there. And it's just one of those things. But this year, the blister bugs, because of our weird weather we had here, we had like a late spring in the summer. You know, it was dry during the spring, and then all of a sudden it rained most of the summer here before it turned into a drought. The blister bugs were early this year. They were here in our second cutting. And, yeah, and usually the third or the fourth cutting before it is. But blister bugs is always a concern. And if they eat enough, even cows, if they eat enough of that ball that you were talking about, it'll get them too. It takes a lot more for cattle, but horses are very sensitive to it. So, but anyway, if you guys are just joining me, I have Professor Ray Smith from the University of Kentucky on here. He is a forage specialist, extension specialist with them, and we're talking alfalfa, and we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. If you'll hang tight with me, Professor Smith, we'll be right back.
Very good. Thank you.
It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
This is the Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, January 14th. 1,850 head were sold. 7 head of steers at 371 brought 221. 8 at 544 brought 185. 19 at 588 brought 172.50. 12 at 683 brought 160.50. 13 at 795 brought 157.25. 23 head of heifers at 428 brought 179. 16 at 550 brought 156.50. 13 at 621 brought 156.50. 6 at 706 brought 152.50. 11 at 758 brought 145.50. Butchered cows were 15 to 74, butcher bulls 55 to 105.50, bred cows 400 to 1325, pairs brought 1400 to 1535. Elk City Livestock Auction, 3202 South Highway 6, Elk City, Oklahoma. Sale every Friday at 9 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
In this area, a lot of people wean their calves off their cows in the fall. Wheat's planted in the fall, and they buy calves. They take them to the sale barn or maybe private treaty. They run them through the winter on wheat. And some sell in March before they cut their wheat. Some take them through May and graze out their wheat and sell them in May or run them through grass in the summer. I have cattle. The guys I work with, they have cattle. I'm a fourth generational rancher. I'm Monty Carlson, and I help make a difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC. It's known as the thief in the night. A lack of cattle mineral can lead to decreased weaning weights, small, weak calves, and severely compromised health. Don't let a gap in your feeding program rob your herd's performance. Stop by Farmers Union Co-op in Elk City and pick up a bag of Purina Wind and Rainstorm Mineral today. Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City is your authorized Purina dealer.
The Day in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
Well, actually, it's warmed up a little bit out there. It's 38 right now with a wind chill of 26. The winds are out of the northeast still at high. It's blowing out there. It's 28, blowing up to 35 miles an hour with gusts. So on the phone with me right now is Professor Ray Smith from the University of Kentucky. He is an forage extension specialist from up there. And you guys, I will give you where you can do the get this update that he's done on this publication. And you can Google him, and you can always go online to Hay and Forage Grower. There's articles in there from him on this. But Professor, I was reading through this article that was in the magazine about you, and you were talking about the Northern Great Plains, basically the Dakotas, Montana, Wyoming, and up into Western Canada. They do this all the time, it sounded like, from your article on grazing alfalfa.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Alfalfa is an important hay crop and included in pastures up there, and so grazing alfalfa is just normal. And when we were writing the article, I was talking to one of our co-authors from Argentina. They've got 8 million acres of mainly pure alfalfa that they're grazing.
Wow. So
definitely a good grazing crop in those areas that it grows well and is adapted. But many areas of the U.S. where we think about alfalfa is a hay crop, we just don't think about the value of it grazing.
Right. And you see more and more articles, no matter where you're looking, you see more and more articles about people doing a grass alfalfa mix and sowing it, because you touched on it earlier, alfalfa is good for the ground. I mean, it makes its own nitrogen, and it remains in there for a long time. The alfalfa I was discussing to you in my email that we had issues with down there under our pivot at Granite, it's been 2 years since we produced any alfalfa down there, and the soil sample we took here just a few weeks ago showed it still had 50 pounds of nitrogen in it, even after we put wheat on it. And so it's really good for the soil. And I know a lot of guys are starting to grow alfalfa for 2 or 3 years and then following it back with cotton or something like that, just switching it and stuff, just because, well, you know as well as I do, fertilizer prices have gone nuts, and people are looking for alternative ways to put your fertilizer back in the soil without costing you an arm and a leg. And then but in your article also, you was talking in there about the trend towards organic certification with especially with dairies and stuff. Tell us a little about that. What'd you find out while you were doing this?
So we've just finished a pretty extensive project with organic dairies here in Kentucky and Tennessee, and in any organic farm, whether you're raising organic beef or dairy, you've got to have 30% of their intake during the grazing season has to come from pasture. And you might as well have it a high-quality pasture like alfalfa or alfalfa grass, so you're getting that maximum production. And what we found in that article, we were comparing alfalfa grass mixtures to different annual mixtures. And we actually thought that the sorghum sedan grass and the winter annuals would do better than the alfalfa. But having alfalfa and the alfalfa grass mixtures, not only are they high quality and high yielding, but they're long lived. So they were much better economically than the annuals that you're having to plant every year, and you're having to take the risk of a failed establishment, things like that. You know, and another thing kind of going along with that is there's a growing popularity in grass fed beef. And over and over and over, when I talked to those producers that are raising grass-fed beef, they said the critical thing is during those last few months, I want them growing fast, I want them the high-quality forage, so they flesh out really well, so that I can get some good steaks to sell people. And alfalfa grass mixtures, you know, fit the bill well with that.
I mean, I didn't even think about that. That's probably pretty, that's a good point, because I push homegrown beef, whether it's grain-fed or grass-fed, on my show a lot, and we get it processed to get it processed locally, because you know what's going on with the crazy stuff in the meat market now. So we have plenty of people out here in Western Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle that raise cattle to be butchered. And matter of fact, I just dropped off 5 at my processor the other day, but we push that. But you got me to thinking there, Professor. So, and that's great. Well, I guess it depends on what part of the country you are. So, for Montana up there in the northern plains, let's just talk for the fun of it here about what kind of grass, what type of grass do they mix in with their alfalfa up there?
So up there, it's going to be things like brome grass, a smooth brome, a meadow brome. Maybe even crested wheat grass, sometimes even alfalfa in some of the native grass stands, because it's such a long-lived forage up there. And you know, the interesting thing, I moved from Georgia, where I was in grad school, to Manitoba, there up above North Dakota.
Yep.
And alfalfa was consistent. I mean, different varieties, ones that would survive the winter there, but alfalfa goes all across North America. The grass that you'd use, those are going to vary depending where you're at and what's adapted and what survives. But really, most any grass will mix well with alfalfa. We're even finding that Bermuda grass, with proper management, you can have a stand of alfalfa with Bermuda grass.
Define proper management.
Well, the key with Bermuda grass is planting alfalfa in the late summer. Early fall, when the Bermuda grass is starting to slow its growth down, so the alfalfa gets established, And then the next spring, it starts growing before the Bermuda, so it's kind of holding the Bermuda grass back, kind of giving it some shading. Then you make a cutting. Both the Bermuda and alfalfa are coming back, but alfalfa's coming back from those all those carbohydrates in the roots, so it comes back a little quicker than the Bermuda. So we usually think Bermuda's going to overtake anything that you plant it with.
That's what I was thinking.
That's right, but making sure the alfalfa gets a good start to start with, and that's where that late summer planting fits in, and then making sure that you allow enough growth that it gets up there and it causes some shading to the Bermuda, each cutting. There's been good work in Arkansas and Georgia, across a fair bit of the southeast, and that system fitting well. You got to make sure that, you know, you've got good fertility, but most people that are planting Bermuda are trying to make sure they've got good fertility as well for good hay crops.
Wow, that's crazy. That's because you look around, and for the most part, the only thing that Bermuda won't choke out is grass burrs. I am. That's why I got people like you on the shows, because I just learned something. Because I would have bet money that Bermuda would have choked out the alfalfa and robbed the carbohydrates from the alfalfa. But here I am, you're proving me wrong again with my stupid thoughts. So,
well, 10 years ago, I'd have told you the same thing. And then John Jennings and Dennis Hancock in Georgia, John's in Arkansas, they came out and figured out a system that worked. In fact, on the alfalfa.org website, there's a publication coming out about, in fact, they've already got it out. I'm just noticing here. Alfalfa Bermuda Grass Management Guide. So same place you'd go to get to our publication on grazing alfalfa, that alfalfa.org website.
Oh, we started something. My text line is lighting up on the radio text line and my personal.
Sure.
So a couple, you got some time here? Because I love talking to you.
I'm good.
Yeah. So, one gentleman texted in and says, so do we no-till the alfalfa in with the Bermuda? That's what he's asking.
That's right. You no-till it in with the Bermuda as that Bermuda is going dormant, there in the late summer.
And so to the gentleman, I know this guy that texted this question in. So, Paul, he's saying spray your Bermuda with Roundup and then put the alfalfa in there. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, so you can make it go dormant. But anyway.
Well, if you go with a light rate of Roundup, a quart per acre, it's not going to kill a Bermuda.
Oh,
so that'd be a way to make sure it's dormant.
Yeah,
but just giving him a hard time. Yeah, the work in Arkansas, they're going in there late in the year and seeding it in. You know, the key, and I can't tell you that in your area that's going to work, but I know it's worked to other areas who didn't think about it. You just want to make sure that the time that you're planting it, you've got enough growth, the alfalfa's going to make it through the winter.
Right. And no different than if you was planting it for the crop. It needs to be established. And he's asking, and he told me there's not a hashtag there either on this question. So anyway, he says, do you have a particular rate for poundage per acre to no-till alfalfa into your Bermuda grass?
So we go in east of the Mississippi, same rate we use normally, which is about 20 pounds per acre. Now, you're probably down at 15 pounds per acre for a normal stand, I would assume?
Anywhere from 10 to 15 on dry land, yes, sir.
Yeah. So you'd go with the same rate. I wouldn't cut back on the rate because you do want to make sure you get a good alfalfa establishment.
Okay. And then what about, I don't know what your knowledge is about our Plains blue stem or our blue stem that we have out here that we grow, whether it's Great Plains or any of the other ones. What about it and alfalfa? Would it be any different than Bermuda grass?
I don't think so, but I know my knowledge of blue stems is they'll handle poorer soils and poor fertility soil. So you got to make sure that you've got
alfalfa soil.
So make sure you've got alfalfa soil planted on. Yeah.
Yeah, he says that he uses 20 to 25 pounds on his dry land, but he gets to farm a lot of good ground along Elk Creek out here south of town down here. So he's he gets some of that. Well, when we're not in the middle of a severe drought, he gets some of that, sub-irrigated ground.
Anyway,
so, all right, hope that helps you out, Mr. Paul. Anyway, he's specified again, it's not a hashtag. So yeah, because blue steam, you could put it on the top of a rock out here, a red shale that we have in some areas, and it'll grow where nothing else will grow besides a cactus. I know we're not that far from Arkansas, but you start out of Arkansas and come across eastern Oklahoma, that's all basically the same ground, but you hit Oklahoma City and I-35 and it's a different world going towards Amarillo. I mean, the soil type, it just slowly gets worse as you come this way, and we still got good ground here, don't get me wrong, but you can see everything just changing in that 150 miles from super good to okay out here where we're at. But there's all right, I got some more stuff in here I was reading. Are you seeing with these severe droughts going on in Arizona and California, a lot of the main alfalfa growing states out west, I feel for them because they've been in this drought, and they've been getting the water cut off from them from the rivers because the cities need it worse. Are you getting involved in any studies that's going on and what's going to happen when things get back to normal out there, or is it just going to be you're on your own kind of deal?
Well, I'm hoping, and this is just me looking at weather reports, with the rain and the snow that they're getting in the mountains, a lot of those areas, that they will, be in better shape. But I'm sure there's going to continue to be that. Even if there's adequate water for irrigation, I'm sure there's going to be that continued competition with the city folks and some of the higher-value crops. So alfalfa acreage in California has dropped a fair bit, several hundred thousand acres in the last 10 years. Part of it is the urban issues. Part of it is higher-value crops like almonds being grown.
Right. Well, one more question, and then we'll get to where on your 16-page article that you did. The guy that texted in, or the person that texted in about the alfalfa and the blue stem, he said he meant his was on bottom land with his blue stem, so he's in very good soil.
So I would just make sure that it's cut down really close before you do that late summer, early fall seeding. So it's going to be coming back really slow. So you just want to maximize the chance for a good alfalfa establishment. So cut it real close, kind of set the grass back, and then get the alfalfa into it.
Yeah.
And again, can't say for sure, but that's what we see working well with Bermuda and what we see working well with getting alfalfa into other grasses.
Well, Professor, believe it or not, I've learned a lot. If you ever put on any 2 or 3 day classes, shoot me an email. I bet I can load up a pickup load of people and give us excuse to come to Kentucky to it. And I don't know. I just appreciate you coming on the show today. But your 16-page grazing alfalfa, an economical and sustainable use of a high value crop, is available on alfalfa.org website. For ordering, or it is a PDF downloads, correct?
That's right. And, when you get to that website, it won't pop up, but you just click on education and click on publications, and you not only see that publication, but a bunch of other ones on alfalfa, including that new one with the alfalfa Bermuda grass.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's awesome, because I was thinking Bermuda grass and alfalfa. No, that ain't going to work. But you proved me wrong. And also, you sent me a link while we were talking about my alfalfa issue that I had down there on that one pivot on the alfalfa variety ratings 2022. And I appreciate that. How people get that article? I know I have it up on my
phone. Yeah, so it's the alfalfa variety ratings that's put out by the National Alfalfa and Forage Alliance group, the NAFA group. So again, that same website, alfalfa.org. And
oh,
you're just
cool.
Looking for the alfalfa variety ratings. And you not only are going to see what varieties, there are several out there now that have good salt tolerance.
Right.
But you see what varieties handle different pests and different diseases. So you make sure you pick the variety that's going to fit best in your area.
Yep, and there's I don't think there's 100 of them on there, but there might be 100 of them on there. But down at the bottom of it, it also has how you can get a hold of the seed companies that actually make the variety that might interest you. So if you can call them if you want to question them some more. But I didn't know until you sent me this article, but there's actually a lot more salt tolerance alfalfa seeding out there than a person thinks.
No, and you know, you mentioned the irrigation issues, and as they've been more limited in irrigation in on the West Coast, they've had more salt issues. Evaporation happens and you get salt on the surface. So there's been a bigger push to develop salt tolerant varieties. So that may could well help some folks out your way too.
Oh yeah, well it's going to help me because we want to grow alfalfa down there, and it's just after we put some cotton on there. That thing didn't go very well because it's basically our own fault. We didn't do a soil test prior to planting alfalfa, but we had just got through cutting basically seven bale an acre wheat hay off of there and never gave it two thoughts because we just got done with the alfalfa. And it was just a lesson learned, but hey, we're fixing it.
Yep, sounds good.
So anyway, well, thank you again, and I hope you get to feeling better. And thank you again for coming on today.
Well, glad to be on, Jimmy. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the show, and look forward to talking to you guys in the future.
All right, and I'll send you a copy of the show, and if you got something comes up in the alfalfa world that you think our listeners need to hear about, you have my email, sir.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right, okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You're listening to Professor Ray Smith from the University of Kentucky. He was a forage extension specialist. I learned something. It was great. And so anyway, I hope everybody can get their questions answered. And I'm sorry I got a senior text after he was off. So I apologize I didn't get that one answer. But anyway, we'll be back with the Long Ranger. And for coming to you from Hobart Farm and Garden, it's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
This is Jerry Nine, owner of the Woodward Livestock Auction. For sale this Thursday, January the 20th, we're expecting 4,500 cattle. We'll start the auction at 8 a.m. From Elk City, got 25 steers at 5, Bicide 57 bull and heifer calves 4 to 5, Sealing 52 long wing steers and heifers at 5, Canton 35 bull and heifer calves 5 to 6, Elk City 26 steers at 6, they're weaned, and Elk City 18 steers at 5, they're weaned. From Bison, Oklahoma, got 60 steers, 8.5, Lady, 62, mixed cattle, 7.5, Buffalo, 122 steers, 8.5, Watonga, 34, heifer, 67, Moreland, got 105, heifer, 7.5, Eldorado, Oklahoma, 57 steers at 8, Clinton, 260 steers at 8, Tologa, 46, heifer, 6-8, Fallout, we got 92, mixed 6-8, Holiday, Texas, 55 steers at 8, Arkansas, 59 steers, heifer, 6-7-50, Mutual, 150 steers at 7, Canadian, Texas, 35 steers at 7, Freedom, 300 black steers, and heifer, 6.5-8, Laverne, 144 steers, 6-8. Abilene, Texas, 143 steers at 7. And Brownwood, Texas, 82 steers and heifer, 7.5. Again, we're expecting 500 cattle. We will start the auction 8 a.m. sharp. That's this Thursday. Thanks, Kim, Jerry 9, and the Woodward Livestock Auction.
From sunup till sundown, we know your irrigation equipment needs to be as hardworking as you, because we all know a farmer's job is never done. Valley is your strength in the field. We're the everyman brand. No matter your operational setup, we have the irrigation equipment and technology to move you forward. Valley products are built to last, easy to operate, and ahead of the curve. Durable, reliable, and built tough. This is Valley.
Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325 or online at knutsonirrigation.com.
This hour's weather brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden. Complete nutrition for every animal, that's what you'll find in Hi-Pro Feeds. At Hi-Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local Hi-Pro Feeds dealer. Providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, or sacks, see their ad in the Penny News and check them out on Facebook. See all they have to offer at HobartFarmAndGarden.com. That's HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I like hearing what he said. You learn something all the time. So if you think about this, if you got a really good pasture of Bermuda grass out there and it's established and you want to put some nitrogen back in the ground that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg, I'm not saying alfalfa seed's cheap because it's not, but it is a long-term legume. So go out there, pill her down right before the fall, and mow it as low as, what he said, mow it as low as you can, and go in there and no-till your alfalfa in there and get it up and established. And next fall or the next spring, you know, it should all come together. Proved my theories wrong on Bermuda grass. I figure Bermuda grass would choke it out, but if you do it right, everything will be good. So let's see here. What do we got? 39 degrees, 27 is their wind chill. Winds 30 miles an hour out of the northeast, gusting up to 40. It's actually warming up a little bit, but the winds are getting higher. Today, breezy, 38. We're already 1 degree above that. Tonight, blustery with 14 degrees is low. 18 to 28 miles an hour wind, so it's going to be cold tonight. Tomorrow, 29 for a high with north winds, 10 to 15 miles an hour. And tomorrow night, 10 with no wind. So it's going to be chilly tomorrow night. And then tomorrow night's when I'm expecting all my heifers to start calving, promise you. Probably be spending the night out there with them. 39 Friday, low Friday night, 19. Starts warming back up Saturday, 46, with light winds out of the west. So it's going to be a nice day, but a little mostly cloudy, though. And then Saturday night, 22, man, wham! 59 degrees and sunny Sunday with west winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. So, looks pretty good. Well, we got a few minutes here, and guess what's coming up this Saturday at 1 o'clock right here at Elk City? The Hudson Angus Farm Annual Bull Sale. Supplier of purebred Angus bulls and females. Bert and Johnny's got it going on out there. At 1 o'clock this deal, they're selling 95 head of feed intake tested 2-year-old bulls, 18-month-old bulls, and females. Any questions, call Bird at 243-8812 or Joe Sanders at 405-638-1944 or go to their website, HudsonAngusFarms.com, or you can email HudsonFarms@gmail.com. That's this Saturday. Bert and them guys will got a good sale coming up. It's always a great sale. So it'll be 1 o'clock. And their annual bull sale's going on. Well, I found this little article here. 13 states had record corn and soybean yields in 2021. Or 2021. There we go. Not 2020-21, but 21. And despite many challenges, the U.S. corn and soybean yields topped those of 2020. And the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because Oklahoma was in those 13 states. And looking at it, we were rated in the top part of that, top half of that. Our average yield was up 11.1% to 150 bushels per acre. We actually yielded more corn per acre than Texas or Kansas. 139 for Kansas, 128 for Texas, 150 for us. No change in Arkansas at 184 bushels per acre. Missouri was down 160 bushels per acre. But, man, Iowa, no wonder their land brings $11,000 to $15,000 an acre. Just their dry land alone raises 205 bushels per acre. But way up there in Washington and Oregon, they do around the 240 to 250. But it rains there every day. Why wouldn't it do that? But I was really caught off guard with that article. I mean, we're getting on up there in the top producers in the United States as far as bushels per acre. So I'm happy Anyway, U.S. farmers were able to grow a record crop last year, despite the fact we had problems in the Dakotas, Minnesota, Missouri, and some of the southern plains. We had a new record of soybean production, barely eclipsed in 2018, but we also this was the second best U.S. corn crop ever, and 2016 must have been the best because we just barely missed it, he said. So anyway, it's great news. Yeah, soybean yield, Oklahoma ain't much to brag on there. We averaged 23 bushels per acre, and that was down 23%. So anyway, hope you guys enjoyed the show. Don't miss tomorrow. I got a special guest originally from Cheyenne, Mr. Bray's coming in from the Cattlemen's Congress in Oklahoma City to give us a play-by-play action of how things went with the second annual Cattlemen's Congress this year. So please join me tomorrow and listen to that show. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. Have a good day and God bless.
Stop music. I love your music because it's such a wide range.
This is KECO, Elk City.
The rhetoric heats up.